Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here once again for KTAH, Tacoma Radio's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate, always respectfully, and from time to time, even optimistically, and more about that later on. It seems like it's the season for the states of this and the state of that, state of the union, state of the state. So I'm going to take the opportunity to talk a bit about my perspective on the state of the climate. I'm going to talk about several things. So how are we doing on greenhouse gas emissions as a nation and as a planet? How about the power and influence of the fossil fuel industry and corporations in general? How are they playing into the climate change picture? Are they getting better or not so much? I'm going to make the point that even if we are using all renewable energy, we can only hope, that's not a get-out-of-jail-free card. All energy comes with environmental costs that we can never stop paying attention to. Okay, what about technology and geoengineering? Can we engineer our way out of this? So let's just jump in and talk about it and see what comes up. So how much CO2 are we putting out in the United States? CO2 emissions have been going down in the United States over the last decade, so that's good news, right? Well, yeah, in a sense, but the reason for the decline is from two sources: the transition from coal to gas as a fuel. Methane, natural gas as it's politely referred to, is relatively clean burning fuel compared to coal, although that data point ignores methane that's leaked directly into the environment during production. Coal not so much leaked in the environment because it's big chunks of hard stuff, but methane's a gas that nobody can see, and it's getting put out into the atmosphere at an alarming rate through the production of natural gas, primarily through the shipping and through the creation of it during the fracking process. So CO2 emissions going down because of the transition from coal to natural gas, and that transition is taking place because coal has largely lost its cost advantage over natural gas. There's another reason why our CO2 emissions, our greenhouse emissions in general, have gone down in the United States over the last decade. One chunk, 2 years, we all know about that, and that's the pandemic. The pandemic has caused a reduction in economic activity, and that in itself has caused a reduction in our greenhouse gas emissions. So once again, okay, good to see that going down, but my concern about that is that it's going down not because we have decided as a species, as a nation, to reduce our fossil fuel emissions. It's just a matter of market forces, a price comparative advantage to natural gas over coal, and because of a pandemic. I will be happier when our emissions are going down because we have decided to bring them down. So far, that has not happened. Of course, Congress is in session, and we've got fingers crossed for some good climate legislation to come out of that Congress, but it all remains to be seen. Of course, we're just one country, and what we do is important, is very important because of our economic activity, but it's only a small part of the overall story. What we really care about is the carbon dioxide, methane emissions all over the world, and the sad truth is that year over year, more CO2, more methane is being released into the atmosphere than in the previous year. So, short version, when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions worldwide, we are on the wrong track, period. Okay, let's just take a quick peek at the subject of geoengineering, technology, and so on. It would be great to think, well, some guy in his basement in New Jersey is going to come up with some cool gadget that's going to save us. It's just not possible to happen because of the scope of the problem. Geoengineering is a concept whereby, rather than reducing greenhouse gas emissions, what we do is we take steps to mitigate the effects of those emissions. So that would be something like putting reflectors out in space to reflect sunlight away from the Earth, putting sulfur dioxide in the atmosphere to block some of the sun's rays. And I gotta say that those proposals are so far from reality and come with so many possible consequences and downsides. I mean, just look at the state of the world right now. How well do you think it's going to go if country A starts putting stuff out into space to make things better for them, but it ends up making things worse for other people? So I'm going to say that kind of stuff is pie in the sky. Another related concept is the concept of carbon capture and storage. And once again, I got to say, the scale that we would have to take to have some kind of meaningful impact on greenhouse gas emissions is just beyond imagining. The United States government has spent a lot of money on carbon capture and storage projects. $1.1 billion is the last number I saw over the last decade. And here's the sad news. That whole thing has been a boondoggle. There is not one single carbon capture storage facility that's up and running. And the sad truth further is that most of the carbon dioxide that is captured is used to force more fossil fuels up out of the ground, thereby creating more greenhouse gas emissions. So anybody talks to you about carbon capture and storage, take a hard look at what it is that they are proposing. While on the surface of it, it sounds great, so far it has proven to not be so great. Okay, let's turn our attention a little bit here to the fossil fuel industry and to other fossil fuel related corporations. We all know that the reason for the existence of corporations is to provide a return to shareholders, and that's what they care about. One of the unfortunate truisms about greenhouse gas emissions is that they come with a cost, but the people who are profiting from creating those emissions do not bear those costs, and they do not want to bear those costs, and they don't want to lose their niche in the world market either. I want to talk a little bit about Florida Power and Light. They can serve as a poster child for what's wrong with the fossil fuel industry and corporate America in general when it comes to talking about greenhouse gas emissions and climate change. I've often flown into Fort Myers in Florida to visit with family there. Just a quick aside here, I buy carbon offsets to make compensation for the greenhouse gases caused by my air travel. Anyway, flying into Fort Myers, Florida, I see acres upon acres of warehouses and similar types of flat-top buildings, white-roofed, soaking up incredible amounts of solar energy and scarcely a solar panel in sight. Over 70% of the electricity in Florida is produced by fossil fuels, another 13% by nuclear power. While Florida has incredible amounts of solar energy available, they are way down the list of states in terms of actually using that. And if their utility, Florida Power and Light, has its way, they'll be using even less of it. They've recently lobbied for a bill that would reduce the net buyback that the utilities would be paying to homeowners with solar on their houses. Right now, it's pretty much an even trade. Electricity that is produced by homeowners is reimbursed at the same rate that it costs other customers to buy electricity through the grid. So it's not a pretty picture. There's a senator in Florida, a state senator, her name's Jennifer Bradley, and she has introduced legislation that would cut that rate by about 75% and would open the door for the utility companies to charge minimum fees to homeowners with solar. It gets uglier. This bill was written by Florida Power and Light, and Florida Power and Light and its parent company have donated $3 million recently to political campaigns and committees. So basically what they're trying to do is to buy themselves an advantage in the market and to set back efforts to transition to clean energy. Remember, once again, over 70% of the electricity produced in Florida right now is fossil fuel produced. So we see over and over everywhere we look in terms of fossil fuel companies and companies that are largely dependent on fossil fuels for their existing business model, they do not want clean energy and they're going to use whatever resources they can to keep us from getting to clean energy. Okay, so speaking of clean energy, green energy, I do just want to make the point, and a lot of the detractors of renewable energy make this point, and it's actually a valid point, and that is all energy sources come with their costs, whether it's things like mining for lithium ion batteries, or mining and smelting aluminum for making frames for solar panels. Extraction and manufacturing will always come with environmental costs. Of course, the ratio is wildly disproportional between clean energy and fossil fuels, which are about as filthy as one can imagine in terms of effect on the environment. So I'm not saying that we don't continue to pursue just as aggressively as we can green energy. We just need to pay attention to the impacts of that green energy in itself too. It's always going to be necessary for us to keep an eye on what our energy expenditures are. Okay, here's another fun subject. Let's talk about nuclear for just a little bit. Personally, I see more and more the notion of the next generation nuclear energy. It's being considered as a carbon-free source of energy. I personally have changed my mind over the last couple of years about the role of nuclear in our energy mix. Let's start off by saying that there's no source of energy that is without its complications and concerns. So nuclear, it's got its complications and concerns, but those complications and concerns are nothing compared to the complications of things like coal, oil, and methane. France has been getting 70% of its electricity from nuclear power for decades without incidents. Hundreds of thousands of people die prematurely every year from coal-generated electricity. If we could wave a magic wand right now and transition all of the Earth's energy needs to nuclear power, hundreds of thousands, even millions of people's lives would be extended and would be better lives to be living. You add to this that the next generation of nuclear power plants, small modular reactors, and other advanced technology makes nuclear a safe, secure source of electricity. We all know that green energy of wind and solar is variable. If the wind doesn't blow for 3 days, there are places that are going to be in trouble if they over-rely on wind energy. We need to have some baseline source of electricity to take up the slack from the variability of green energy. If we end up in a situation as we take fossil fuel electric generation offline and we don't replace it adequately with a reliable source of power, we're going to start having rolling blackouts. That's already started down in California. Rolling blackouts are going to lead to political pushback, and we'll find ourselves starting up coal-fired plants just to make sure we have a reliable source of electricity. So in my view, nuclear power is something we're going to have to do. Yes, it takes a long time to build a nuclear power plant. When's the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. When's the best time to start a nuclear power plant? 20 years ago. Well, we haven't done it adequately, but now is the time to do it. Time's a wasting. Okay, let's just talk a little bit about hydrogen since we're having so much fun here. For whatever reason, the most common forms of hydrogen, and I guess I should say the sources of hydrogen, have been given the terms gray hydrogen, blue hydrogen, and green hydrogen, and let's sort those out. So gray hydrogen is the form that's primarily made commercially right now. This hydrogen is created from fracked methane. It takes a lot of energy to convert the methane to the gray hydrogen. It releases enormous amounts of carbon dioxide. Gray hydrogen is a dirty and unacceptable fossil fuel. Of course, the manufacturers of hydrogen like to say, well, you know, when you burn hydrogen, all you get is water vapor, which is true enough, but it skips all the rest of it. The methane that's lost during the extraction process, the carbon dioxide that's released during the process, and the enormous amounts of energy required to crack that methane into hydrogen. Okay, the next one is called blue hydrogen. It is a step better than gray hydrogen, but only in the sense that blue hydrogen is created by using green energy. So better, but still, in my view, an unacceptable form of energy. So what's left is referred to as green energy, and I got to say yes, yay for green hydrogen. Green hydrogen is formed from water using electricity to separate the hydrogen and the oxygen to release the hydrogen. And if we use clean energy to do that, then we get this beautiful clean hydrogen, and the promise of hydrogen is actually met. And there is a place for a fuel like hydrogen. I'm thinking of long-distance ocean vessels or long-distance aircraft. Batteries just don't work in those environments. So if we're going to talk about hydrogen, it needs, in my view, to be talked about only in terms of green hydrogen. So this is just some of the overview of what's going on in my view in terms of climate change, fossil fuel emissions. So is there anything to be optimistic about? As I say, good question. And I do believe there is one very important, very significant reason to be optimistic, and that is because there are literally millions of people around the world who care fiercely about the future of our climate and who are dedicated to getting us ever so slowly and begrudgingly to change our energy and agricultural practices. to whatever extent we as a species are able to mitigate the effects of the climate change that we as a species are creating, I believe it's going to be up to us, mostly at the grassroots, to make those changes. I do not believe that those in political and economic power are going to be willing or able to make the changes we need to make. So the numbers of people who are passionate about this subject do give me cause for optimism. I heard one commentator about the COP26 saying that the governmental representatives at that conference, for the most part, were bound by what they thought they could do and still get elected, or their bosses get elected. That would be, of course, for those in countries where there are reasonably free and fair elections. Fossil fuel and other corporate interests are pretty much running things in terms of elections in democracies around the world. They have the money, the clout, the interest. They are staffed with smart and energized people who are trying to get as rich as they can, as quickly as they can. They are not concerned about the future of the planet. However, a Harvard researcher has shown that it doesn't take a great number of devoted and energized folks at the grassroots to bring about social and economic change. So I believe we can do it, and that's the source of my optimism. There are questions. The environmental movement tends to be fractured with hundreds of organizations, each with its own agenda, agreeing about a lot of things, but disagreeing on a lot of things too. So once again, that's up to us at the grassroots to get our organizations talking to each other and pulling in the same direction. So yeah, I'm optimistic that we can do that, but my optimism in no way guarantees that we as a species are going to do that. That will be up to each one of us, basically every minute of every hour of every day. And there you have my state of the climate for 2022. So that's it for today. Thanks as always for listening. I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at john@ccltacoma.org, john@ccltacoma.org. The CCL part is for Citizens Climate Lobby. It's one of those grassroots organizations I was talking about. Check it out. You can go there to ccltacoma.org. It's a good outfit, a lot of good people. You might find something of value there. If not CCL, there's lots of other great organizations. If you don't belong to one, and if you're not active in one, check it out. Get active. It's up to us. Just a reminder, you can find this climate talk on the KTAH archive, along with all other locally produced programming. Just do an internet search for KTAH, look for programming, and you'll find the archive right there. So that's it for today. Once again, here I am reminding you, as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care now.